Everything in Kali Yuga. And we find even fruit, even food substance, namesake they have, but they don't have the characteristics of that fruit. Today, thanks to our technological advancement, I've tasted some fruits. Huge, you know. They're artificially kind of made. So many kind of huge tomatoes. It's amazing. Such huge and perfectly, whatever shape you want, you can produce it. By so many grafting, adopting process. But you eat it, it's like, you know, a piece of thermocol being eaten. There's no taste in it. But they look really huge. External is given so much importance. In every aspect, in not only human nature, not only even fruits, it is said, as Kali Yuga pass, the fruit, a mango or something like that, will consist only of two things. Thick skin and thick, what is that, seed. Very less of pulp. That means the essence of everything will be lost. Externals will be very nicely emphasized. But the essence of everything that exists will go away. This is the essence of Kali Yuga. And you find it. For small things, world wars start. And everywhere there is hypocrisy. A person is claiming to become a leader of the people simply on basis of his charisma. In the sports field or this field or that field. They have no qualification whatsoever. Simply because they are just little popular. Shudras will become Kshatriyas. This is what is said. They have no essence of Kshatriya spirit, leadership spirit. But just because they are popular among the people, they will be voted into power. Essence will be lost. Only externals will remain. And one particular verse beautifully explains how degradation will take place. I don't have to tell you. You can think for yourself. I'll just quote the verse. This is the description of Kali Yuga in Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, first chapter, first verse. It says, Tatashchanudinam dharma satyam shaucham kshamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshati ayu balam smritihi. He says, Shukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj, he says, Tatascha anudinam, O king, day by day in Kali Yuga, there are few things that will reduce. Dharmaha, religiosity or piety, satyam, truthfulness, shaucham, cleanliness, kshama, tolerance, daya, mercy, kalena balina rajan, O king, by the influence of time, nangshati, degrade, ayu, people's lifespan will be reduced. Balam, people's strength will be reduced. And smriti, people's memory power will be reduced. How succinctly, how comprehensively the principles of truth have been brought out in this each verses of these of wisdom within condensed in any condensed form. We see it every day. In fact, as Kali Yuga is advancing, we find few years later, we feel ourselves as old generation and new generation is totally changed. Even high school boys will say, as they go to college, they say, my God, you know, in our time, schools were not like this. So fast, I mean, the degradation is, the graph may be going like this, completely declining. Tatascha anudinam dharma. People, practically nobody knows about what is dharma, first of all. What to speak of becoming piety. Impiety is prevailing, increasing day by day. Atheism is prevailing day by day, or increasing day by day. Satyam, truthfulness has been lost. Earlier, people didn't go to court, didn't go to think. Once spoken, it was understood. Finish. Ragukula riti sadachaliyai prana jaya par vachana jaya. Once spoken, finish. It was like lying on a rock. But today's statement is lying on water. Before the line is over, already it is gone. Hari, 2 hours ago you told me like this. No, I never said. Even if I said what I meant was not like this, I meant like this. Therefore, what to speak of, you know, like hold this Gram Panchayat. What was this system? Five people come together and say, no, this is not your land, this is his land. Finish. No papers. But now, write down. Who knows, suddenly you will turn. Amongst family members, intimate family members, bond paper signed by, you know, some authority. No trust. People don't keep their words. Satyam, truthfulness is totally gone. Shaucham, cleanliness will go away. Cleanliness of body, cleanliness of mind, cleanliness of consciousness will be lost. People will become impure, unclean in their habits, unclean in their mind, unclean in their consciousness. Satyam, Shaucham, Kshama, people's tolerance will reduce. We find it in the trains. It is very prominent in the local trains. Bombay trains, you get a lot of realization. If you are very, you can become self-realized in the local trains. One day I was just traveling and one old man is standing, poor fellow. And somebody pushed him from behind and he stepped on somebody else. And that fellow slapped him. Young man slapped him. And this fellow got, what can he do? He's helpless because somebody else is pushing from behind. And this fellow beat up. So his son who was standing, he beat him up. And ultimately it was a big war. And nobody knew how it began. But everyone is just, you know, making space for himself and taking out all their old revenges. So in this way, no tolerance whatsoever. People can't tolerate an old man at home anymore. Put him in some old age home. People can't take responsibility to the children. Put him in some there, here, there, everywhere. You know, somebody else take responsibility. I can't manage. People can't tolerate their wives or husbands for long if they are not satisfying their senses. People change their husbands and wives every few years as we change cars and vehicles. People can't tolerate. Recently I heard in the Bandra court, one man divorced his wife just because she didn't use the oil that he wanted. Or something like that, you know. She didn't use the oil, or she used oil which he didn't want, or something. Petty reason. So, Kshama, people's tolerance will reduce. Daya, mercy will be lost. Even a mother will not hesitate to kill the child within the womb, the helpless child within the womb who is about to see the light of the day and live a life. She will not hesitate. The height in the material world of love is love's mother's love for the child. But people are becoming so negligent. People will become so negligent. It will be a normal thing to just abort the child. Daya will be lost. Just for the satisfaction of their tongue, they're ready to kill any animal as long as it is very tasty to them tongue. Kalena balina rajan, by the influence, O king, Nangshati will degrade. Ayu, people's lifespan will be reduced. It is said a time will come when a 20-year-old person will be considered grand old man. And it's a fact, it's happening. Today somebody is 40 and if he's still healthy, still, huh? No problem. Achha. Very nice. Congratulations. Very difficult. Every third fellow has some back problem, fourth fellow has some asthma, everything has so many problems. Heart attacks, as we were discussing the other day. Some 27-year-old gets a heart attack and dies. 17-year-old boy comes to the program and says, I need a chair because I have arthritis. Lifespan will reduce. Somebody lives for 80 years, you'll be considered, my God, grand old man, 80 and still alive and moving, walking still on your own 2 feet. Manna padega. So Nangshati Ayu and Balam, people's strength will reduce. People will become completely weaklings. They will have no strength. We can't even imagine how it's described in the Mahabharata, how the warriors of previous ages, like Arjuna it is described, he would shoot arrows for 2 kilometers, it would travel without deflecting even a little. It would pierce through the head of an elephant come out through its back and still travel. That was the power behind their releasing the arrow. Their height was big, their power was strong, and they would shoot these arrows with all their strength from morning to evening, from sunrise to sunset. It's not that, okay, lunch hour now. And today even powerful cricketers whom we consider very, very powerful and, you know, from Africa or something very heftily built, to throw one ball few yards, they have to run half the field, half a kilometer. And after six, you rest and somebody else will throw from that side. And in between there is a lunch break and dinner, you know, lunch, some drinks. People's lifespan. And today we find, you know, within the homes, the ladies, they find it so difficult. And earlier they were at least doing all kinds of activities, preparing their own things, and now everything is ready-made. And therefore, after a few years, you find that they are incapable, you know, their body starts having so many problems. Because everything is being contaminated and polluted, and therefore the lifespan is reducing. It's not any individual fault. The whole essence of Kali Yuga is degrading. Everything is getting contaminated, and therefore it is affecting the body also and lifespan. Balam. People's strength will reduce. Now, I didn't believe when I heard that Bhima would, you know, take elephants and throw them, and Arjuna would shoot arrows. It's described. People would just, with their sword in the yajna, Kaushalya, in Ashwamedha Yajna, they have to cut a head of a horse with one stroke. And these Kshatriyas, when they would hit someone, not only would they cut that fellow into half, but his horse also into half. That was the power within their hands, and that was their energy. I would believe that this is all mythology. Come on, this is all nonsense. That can't happen. But one day after I spoke like this in a Gita course, one man came to me, Swamiji, I have some information also. You can tell in the Gita course. Real fact I have known. I said, yeah, what is it? He said, you are talking about 5,000. I will talk about only 500 years or 350 years ago. I said, what? He said, in Salarjung Museum, you know, in Hyderabad, they have kept the armor of these rulers 350 years ago, the kings who would wear these armors. Just about 350 years ago, he has collected all this, their swords and their armors. To lift that sword, you require both the hands. You have to really, only a weightlifter can do this. They would catch this and fight with it, you know, just moving the wrist. And he said, I will tell you one more information. I said, yes. He said, during the shooting of Mughal-e-Azam, Prithviraj Kapoor is a very hefty fellow. He thought that he would make the shooting as real as possible. So it seems he went and borrowed that armor and wore it so that, you know, it will be very natural, because he was shooting an incident which was many years ago. After wearing that armor, he just could not get up. He just, forget about fighting, he just couldn't stand. People had to lift him up and he said, remove this. Put some, make an armor. Maybe they made of some thermocol or something. Then you move around. So he said, this is a fact. It had been in the newspaper, so he said, I'll get you some cuttings and things like that. It's a practical thing. It's unimaginable. Even within a span of 350 years, what to speak of, you know, thousands of years. So Nangshati, Ayu, Balam, and finally Smriti. People's memory span will reduce. It is described, when the Bhagavatam was spoken, 18,000 verses, nobody would, you know, it is not a surprising, everything would say it's all right. And after a few days, anyone was asked, they would repeat the whole 18,000 verses as it is. That was the power of retention. That was the quality of life, everything. Therefore, it was unknown to write books 5,000 years ago. It was communicated by word of mouth, Guru Shishya Parampara. But unfortunately today, forget about verses and shlokas, forget about 18,000. They can't even remember a mobile number if it is too big. 01204280. Wait, hold on.
4800 whatever.
Can't remember. After some time you get mixed up. Even 50 years ago in Andhra, I was told there was a Shrutidhar. Shrutidhar means Shruti, that means he hears, and Dharan. Dharan means to hold it. Once you hear, you hold it like a tape recorder. There was a test. It was a competition. Shrutidhar. Who can remember more? And how was he tested? The score was given according to how many people in the audience he can handle at the same time. In what way? The test is this. 100 people are sitting in the audience, like this, suppose. And I want to take the competition of Shrutidhar. I am sitting here. And randomly, anyone will stand up and ask any question of his choice. You will ask, then this person, his. All the 100 will ask questions. And he is supposed to just hear the question, see who asked it. And after the 100 questions are over, he is supposed to ask the first person to stand up and answer his question. Not that he is writing down and everything. Remember that. You ask the first question, your question was this, your answer is this. Not only that, question only remembering, but he has to answer it. He answers. Second question was yours, you asked this, and this is your answer. Third is this, this is the answer. He answers 100, if he is able to answer 100 people, then he is like a century. If he can handle 50, then he would say he was Ashtavadhani. Now, today it is Ashtavadhani. Ashta means 8 people if you can handle. 8 people, no problem, very good. And during all these 100 questions that is going on, there is one man continuously ringing the bell. Tung, tung, tung. At the end of question answer session, he has to say how many bells were rung. Can you imagine? 50 years ago, this was done. Now recently there was a competition, Ashtavadhani, right? Shatavadhani, Ashtavadhani, all this. Shatavadhani means he's a centurion, he can handle 100. Just like Maharathi. In battle, if you are a Maharathi, you can handle 100 soldiers at the same time. Or 1,000 soldiers. Atirathi. Each was given a title. And he has to fight with only that fellow, not some ordinary people. So there was, different kind of existence was totally different. It's unimaginable, and therefore we think it's not possible by us, therefore it's all mythology. But in principle, in Kali Yuga, the essence of everything will degrade and reduce, and only the externals will be given importance. That is the principle, and we see it all around today. So in this way we find how beautifully, comprehensively, the principle of knowledge was retained and communicated. This was the Vedic. This is the Vedas. And not only did they spoke of the past, but also the future was predicted perfectly. It has stood the test of time. You can see it in principle how the degradation is happening. So to conclude this particular discussion, Veda comes from the root word with, that means to know, and Veda means the body of knowledge. And Veda means original and infallible knowledge. Original means the original source of every knowledge. And infallible, it can never be proved false because it is the way it is. The Vedas are also called Shruti. Shravan means to hear. Shruti means knowledge that is heard, received by hearing. So, earlier, before Kali Yuga began 5000 years ago. Before that, Vedas were not written down. The Vedic body of knowledge was never written down. Only 5000 years ago, it was compiled by Vedvyas, knowing what will be the degradation in the future. Therefore, it was compiled. Because otherwise, they knew that people can tamper with it, and therefore they would never write down. They would just be transferred by word of mouth. And people were, only capable people were given this knowledge, who could retain it and not change it and communicate it across. The Vedas are also called apaurusheya. Purusha means human being. Purusheya means manufactured by human being. Apaurusheya means they are not manufactured by any human being. In the sterile brains of some limited living entity. Then one may ask, where has it come from? Next. Yeah. The scriptures are compared to a manual. Just like, suppose you buy an electronic instrument from a shop. When you buy a complicated instrument or any product, along with the product, a small booklet is given which explains what is the purpose of this product, what to do to maintain the product, what not to do to see that it doesn't get spoiled. Finally, what are the ingredients that this product is made up of? And if something goes wrong, what to do it? How to put it back in order? Right? Basically, you buy medicine. It tells about what is it for. It's not for loose motion, it is for cough. This is the purpose of this. And it says, it is to be, don't keep it in a warm place or, you know, keep it in a cool place. So do's and don'ts. How to handle it, how not to. Take only this dose, not to take this. Thirdly, it talks about do's and don'ts and the purpose. Then it talks about the ingredients. It's made up of this, you know, this chemical in this percentage. And then it talks about if somebody takes overdose, if any problem, what to do. Whom to approach or how to get it out, whatever. Whether you buy an instrument, whether you buy some medicine, whether you buy any product, this information is supplied. Similarly, scriptures, it is believed because it is authorized. In the scriptures itself, it says that scriptures are like a manual. When God created the universe, the material world, along with the product, He gave a manual as to what is the purpose of this product, what are the components that it is made up of, how to live or use this product, how not to use this product, and why things can go wrong, and what to do if things go wrong to set it right. This is called scripture. This is not given by any human being. The manufacturer has supplied the manual. You can't tamper with it. You can't tamper with it. You may tamper, but it won't work. Suppose you change the manual, but the product will not change simply because you have changed the manual. You may tamper with the manual. You can't change the product because the product has been manufactured for a specific purpose with a specific component for a specific use. That is all. You can't take the microphone and hit nail. You may. That's your problem. But it's meant for a specific purpose. You will have problem if you misuse it. Similarly, the creation, the living entities, everything has a purpose. That is mentioned in the scriptures. And therefore, that's called a manual. But then, there is a question that arises. There are so many religions in the world. And everyone says, we believe in God, all the bona fide religions. And God himself has given them scriptures. If God himself has given scriptures to all of them, why there are different scriptures? Why there are differences in the scriptures? If one manufacturer is manufacturing only one product, but for different people he gives different manuals, they say this is wrong. The product is the same, the manufacturer is the same, but he's giving different manuals to different people. That sounds a little ridiculous. So how do we understand that every bona fide religion claims that God has given us the scriptures to a great saint, through a great messenger, through his own servant, who on their behalf come to represent and give this knowledge. But then, why is there a difference? So many differences are there. Why there is fighting? So to understand that, we need to know why, what are the differences and why. if there is any in the first place. The next one. So, why different scriptures? If the manufacturer is the same, that same God, it's not that different religions have different God, the same universe is created by one person, and then product is the same, everyone is living in the same world, why has he given different manuals? Actually, in one sense, there is no difference in all bona fide scriptures. There is no difference, actually. In truth, in principle, there is no difference. There may be difference only in the detail. According to time, place and circumstance, the details may vary, but the principles never change. The principles can never change. The principles are the same. Its practical application according to time, place and circumstance may be different. So different scriptures are meant for different audiences and revealed according to time, place and circumstance. In principle, they are not changed. Difference. Like for example, I'll give you a small example which will make it clear. Before independence, Gandhi claimed, he requested that all Indians use khadi. At that time, khadi represented, what did it represent? Because the English, the Britishers who were ruling here, would take the raw materials from here, manufacture in their factories to give them labor, and then sell back to us with a high price. Therefore, Gandhi said, no, we will manufacture our own cloth and we will become self-reliant. Self-reliance was the principle, and also simplicity. Everyone will care. Khadi don't know no big differences. It's like uniform, school uniform, just to have uniformity. So simplicity and self-reliance was the principle behind wearing khadi. Anyone who wore khadi, it spoke that we want self-reliance and simplicity. Today we are an independent nation. We are manufacturing our own clothes. Not only khadi, but all kinds of varieties. But still, there are two kinds of followers of Gandhi. One fellow says, Gandhi said khadi, wear khadi. If khadi is not available in India, get imported khadi, but wear khadi, because Gandhi said khadi. That is called a fanatic follower. A fanatic follower sticks to the letter of the law, but misunderstands the principle of the law. Now, there may be a sincere, bona fide follower of Gandhi, who understands the principle that Gandhi meant simplicity and self-reliance. And I'm a medical representative and I have to dress up myself. So I have a tie and I have a suit, boot, everything. Everything manufactured in India. And I have only two sets. One I wash and another I wear. Simplicity. But according to my profession, according to time, according to the situation, I live simply and do my profession. That requires the necessity of a parampara, an unbroken chain of disciplic succession of a guru. A guru is a man who knows all the scriptures. Not, he may not memorize and he may speak all the scriptures. No. He knows the purpose of the scriptures. He knows the essence of the scriptures, the import of the scriptures. He lives by the principles and he teaches people according to time, place and circumstance how to live the principle according to your situation. That is a guru. And without a guru, the whole Vedic scriptures will remain a mystery, an impractical, fanatic, useless body of knowledge. Can't be interpreted. Therefore, if you really want to understand the Vedas itself say how to understand. What is that? Bhagavad Gita says, you have to approach a guru. And who is a guru? Not a big bearded man or a well-shaven man who speaks in Sanskrit, who sneezes also in Sanskrit. No, not his qualification. The real qualification is, he has come in a bona fide line, he has heard from the proper source, he has digested the information and ascertained the import, the purpose, and the essence of scriptures. And maturely, according to time, place, and circumstance, he applies the same principle according to the situation, time, place, and circumstance. One who sticks to the spirit of the law is a real follower. One who sticks to the letter of the law becomes a fanatic. The problems are not due to the principles of the scripture. The scriptures are pure because they are represented by pure representatives of the Lord. It is said, Jesus spoke because he was moved by the Spirit from within, the Holy Ghost. He was not giving his own concoction as it was revealed. They are called the revealed scriptures. They are not said, manufactured scriptures. They were revealed by the Lord from within, and he became an instrument to deliver that message. So all bona fide propounders of the Vedic body of knowledge, different places, different situations, according to time, place, have given the details differently, but the principles remain the same. All the scriptures agree that the Lord is supreme. La ilaha illallahu. There is no one other than the Lord. Even in the Bible, it claims that God is supreme. There is no one above him. The Bhagavad Gita says, who is God? He says, asamurdhva. There is no one equal to him. Asama, urdhva. There is no one above him. The principle is same. Every religion says, be not attached to the external sense gratification. Every religion says, the essence is to surrender to God. In fact, the word Islam means surrender. And when Jesus Christ was asked by his disciples, Moses has spoken all these, so many laws, but give us the essence. You are the representative of Moses. Give us the essence of the scriptures. And what he said, thou shalt love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and all thy might. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Which means love. And love means surrender. What is love? Love means for his benefit, for the others, the lover's benefit, you are ready to sacrifice any self-interest. That is love. What is Islam? Islam, the word means surrender. And what does the Bhagavad Gita conclude? Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of so-called religion that you have concocted. Completely surrender unto me. The principle of all religion is the same. The essence is the same. But unfortunately, not understanding from a proper source, trying to break your head against the wall of interpreting your own concoctions, people see only the details. There will be differences in details. The more you focus on the details, you become a fanatic. The more you focus on the common principles, there is unity. Because the person who has given is the same, and the product is also the same. So different scriptures are meant for different audiences and revealed according to time, place, and circumstance. They are not different scriptures. They are the same body of knowledge, but given according to time, place, and circumstance and qualification. For example, how the essence is always the same. We have already discussed how in all the scriptures, everyone agrees. Let's take different dictionaries. Now, there is a 17-volume Webster's dictionary. Huge! And then there is a same Webster company produces pocket dictionaries, medical dictionaries, some technical dictionaries. Now, do you think the meaning within the pocket dictionary will be different than the meanings in the original Webster's? What do you feel? Obviously not. But the purpose is different. The pocket dictionary is meant to be carried in a pocket. You can't have a huge, 17 volume put in a pocket. Pocket dictionary means it is for immediate reference, whatever is local usage, immediate usage, 2,000, 3,000 words, and immediate meanings, whatever is required. But in a huge 17 volume Webster's, you may find
all different usages, old usage, current usage, and all different shades of usage, each word may be explained in 2 pages. And therefore, it's a huge detail. Whereas in a pocket dictionary, you may find just one mention, one line. The essence is mentioned, that's all. This word is used for this purpose. All different shades of meaning, all different usages, current usage, it was also used for something like that. That's gone. But it's manufactured by the same person, same company, and it's also a dictionary. But the purpose is different according to what its use is, according to whom it is being distributed. Another example. Explanation of an expert physician of a same phenomenon. Suppose there is a case of food poisoning. And here is a surgeon, you know, MD in surgery, or, you know, some other, so many other FRCS or whatever. Now, a young child, you know, in nursery or primary school comes and says, "Uncle, can you please tell me what exactly happens when we eat food? What happens to the food after it is ingested? What exactly happens?" So looking at the child and its ability, he may say, "Well, beta, you eat it and it goes into the belly and, you know, energy is derived, you become very strong. Whatever is not required is thrown out as stool, feces, finish. Simple." 10th standard fellow comes and says, "Uncle, actually tomorrow is my biology exam, you know. I want to know exactly what happens when you eat food." Then he may say, "Okay, the food is ingested, then it, you know, and different kinds of vitamins are there. What are the different carbohydrates and this? It's absorbed by these kind of thing. And then whatever is remained, they just, how, you know, different elementary canal, that, this, and, you know, it just goes away." And suppose an MBBS fellow comes and says, "Sir, tomorrow is my exam, you know, physiology exam. Can you please explain me what exactly happens when this is ingested? Because I have this doubt about this." He may go a little more detail, how it passes through the esophagus, and then, you know, this, there is a different gland secreting so many kinds of things, what exactly happens, what are the different enzymes, how it is broken up, and ultimately how the waste product is brought out and how it is transported, different enzymes functioning, different cells pressing it out and pushing it out. Great detail. And suppose few hours later, another MD surgery FRCS from, you know, same institute, he comes and says, "Dear friend, there is a case of food poisoning. I am going to operate and I have already opened the whole thing, you know, he's lying on the operating table. But suddenly I have developed a doubt that, you know, this kind of thing, what exactly happens?" And his explanation may go into something which will go above our head. The same person speaking about the same thing, what happens when the food is ingested, but according to different capacities, it is being explained to so different people. And therefore, we find that externally there are differences, but in principle, it is the same. The food is ingested, whatever is needed is utilized, and whatever is not realized is thrown out. This is the principle. So anyone who understands the essence and knows the full detail can expertly, according to time, place and circumstance, apply that knowledge. If he doesn't have access to the whole import or the purpose of the scriptures, then he'll become a fanatic. Therefore, the problem today is nobody has accessed the knowledge in a scientific and systematic way, and self-claimed gurus. It's like a doctor suddenly says, "I have read the books, you know, I bought from the library and I read the book, therefore I'm a doctor. I know everything." No. He has to be passed from a university. He has to have a, you know, recognized university. Therefore, if this knowledge is not received through an unbroken chain of disciplic succession from the establishment established by the Lord, recognized representatives of the Lord in an unbroken chain and presented without interpretation, but after thoroughly digesting according to time, place and circumstance, it is bound to create fanaticism is bound to create religious wars. Even within one particular religion, there are so many sects, so much of differences of opinion, strong and fights. That's Kali Yuga. Because everyone claims to be a representative, but he is not qualified. That is a danger. If you are careful about that, then we can remain. So the Vedas are like the 17-volume Websters. And all the other products that have come out, according to time, place and circumstance, the Lord has revealed to these people. We find the Bible a restricted body of knowledge. In creation, there is a chapter on Genesis. Few chapters. Lord said, let there be light, and there was light. Within 7 days, the God created. That's all. That's a mention of it. The principle is that God wanted and created. Now, if you read the Vedic literatures, it says chapters after chapters, cantos after cantos about from the subtlest point to the grossest point, the details about creation. How first came ether, from there air, from there water, from there fire, from there earth. From subtle to gross, whole detail of how the Srishti or the creation came about. Unimaginable in any other scriptures. That's the Veda, because Veda is the original body of knowledge. Please don't misunderstand when I say Veda. It's not that a fanaticism I'm claiming about garv se kaho hum Hindu hai. No. Veda means the original infallible body of knowledge which contains everything under the sun. And therefore, when great souls empowered by the Lord, they come, representatives of the Lord, according to time, place and circumstance, they give the knowledge. It is not that Jesus Christ was less self-realized. It is not that Muhammad was less self-realized. But the people whom they were speaking to were of that type, and therefore they spoke accordingly. In fact, at one place Jesus says, I have much more to tell you, but you can't bear it now. In the book of John, he says this. I have much more, because he was speaking to a set of shepherds and fishermen. Therefore, you find he told them about some stories. A lot of stories are there. You know, it is not that he was less self-realized, but the kind of people, according to time, place, whatever was their power of reception, he gave the truth. He never compromised on the truth. Principles were not compromised. But the details are very less. But in the Vedas, you find all body of knowledge in all the details. Unfortunately, most of which is lost now. But essence is retained. Whatever we need to know to solve our problems. We are doing all these exercises just to solve our problems, right? So that is there. Fortunately, by the Lord's grace, it has been retained. Now you may say, Veda, all the body of knowledge, when will I ever learn? To learn Sanskrit, the Vedic knowledge, most of it is in Sanskrit. To learn Sanskrit will take 12 years for you. If you drop everything and learn Sanskrit, it will take 12 years of subtle grammar. After that, you have to understand the Upanishads. You have to hit your head against the very complicated language. When will you know? There are so many, more than lakhs of verses, nobody will ever access. Therefore, understanding the degradation in Kali Yuga, understanding the nature of people in Kali Yuga, how people of Kali Yuga want crash course, you know, quick. There are some books, you know, 30 dino mein sikho Telugu, 30 dino mein sikho, eh? Everything they want, quick. They have no time. Actually, their lifespan is also very short, they understand. They have no time. Including cricket matches, 5 days. Now, you know, test matches are out. One day international, 60-60, finish the job, that's all. You know, can't sit in front of the TV watching, you know, every day. Everything is crash course. Give me a medicine and everything, you know, all should disappear. I don't want to, you know, take this and do this and take water and do 20 minutes exercise. No, no, no. One tablet, everything should disappear. Give quick. That's what it is. That's Kali Yuga. Knowing the nature of Kali Yuga, God is very intelligent. He knew. He knows Kali Yuga what is going to happen. Therefore, very, very mercifully, He has given a crash course on Veda. The essence, the principles, without touching on the details. And that is the Bhagavad Gita. Using Arjuna as an instrument, He gave a crash course, 1.5 hours crash course to Arjuna. Using Arjuna as an instrument. Not that Arjuna was less self-realized. Just like a new bride, daughter-in-law comes home and the mother-in-law wants to teach her some etiquettes of the home. Very difficult, you know, that relationship has to be maintained nicely. Very high-tension relationship, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. So what she does is, in front of the daughter-in-law, she says to her daughter, Beta, in this house, you know, you should do like this, like this, like this. Indicating to the daughter-in-law, get the message, this is the law. Similarly, Arjuna was a dear friend of Krishna. But using Arjuna as an instrument, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita and gave a crash course on the Vedas. It's described, the glories. Gita Mahatmya says, what is the Bhagavad Gita? Sarvo Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopala Nandana Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahat. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo. All the Upanishads are compared to a cow. Dogdha Gopala Nandana. Who is milking the cow? Gopala Nandana. Krishna is milking the cow. Partho Vatsaha. Arjuna is compared to a calf. Sudhir Bhokta. Dugdham Gita Amritam. And the milk is compared to Bhagavad Gita. And the drinkers of the milk, all customers who are sitting here, are congratulated as Sudhi. Dhi means intelligence. Sudhi. Sudhi means very intelligent people will drink this milk. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo. The Vedas are big body of knowledge. Lakhs and lakhs of verses. We have no time. Therefore, the Vedanta, Veda Anta. Anta means end of Vedas. What is the purpose of Vedas? That is indicated in Vedanta. And Vedanta, another word of Vedanta, are the Upanishads. What is Upanishad? Upa means near. Ni means under. And Shat means to sit down. If you want to know the principle, the essence of the Vedas, you have to learn this truth sitting at the feet of a self-realized guru. By the mercy of guru, by the mercy of God, you get a guru, and by the mercy of guru, you understand who is God. Otherwise, this secret will remain locked up. You can never beat your head against the Vedas. You can never decipher. Because that is the way the Veda has been manufactured. That the system has been given by God like this. That you have to access through the password that only Guru gives. Without the password, you may have everything with you in front. Screen is there. But you can't access it. The Guru has the password. Of course, it's not a password. And you get it. No. It's a very slow process of how to understand. Tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. We will discuss that later, but I'm just giving you the essence. So, sarvo upanishado. The Vedanta means Upanishad. But there are 108 Upanishads. Very complicated language. Don't worry about the Vedanta. Sarvo upanishado gavo. If all the Upanishads, the Vedanta is compared to a cow, Dogdha Gopalanandana. Krishna, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, very mercifully for all of us, has churned out the essence of the cow. What is the essence of the cow? The milk. He's churning out the essence of the cow. Dogdha Gopalanandana. Partho Vatsaha. I don't know if you have seen milking of the cow. The cow doesn't give milk unless the calf is there. So the calf comes and starts drinking. After its quota is over, then the milk can be taken out. Using Arjuna as an instrument, as a mother-in-law uses a daughter to convey to the daughter-in-law, using Arjuna as an instrument, Partho Vatsaha, he has churned out the essence of the Vedas for all intelligent people for all time to come to drink and nourish themselves, become spiritually strong, understand who they are, what are the problems of life, why the problems exist, and how to overcome them. This is the nourishment that is being provided. You don't have to maintain a cow. Simply just drink this milk. All the purpose is served. All the purpose of reading the Vedas, understanding the Vedanta, reading Sanskrit, not required. Simply under proper sources, proper authority, with a proper consciousness, with a proper attitude in the mind, listen to the essence being presented. Logically, systematically, scientifically. Ask questions. Doesn't mean humble means hey, whatever you say, black is white, okay, white. Why? Because you say. No, not like that. One can inquire, pariprashnena, to clarify things and sincerely apply it in one's life. One should humbly listen, sincerely inquire, and to the best of one's ability, put it into practice. This is the sign of a disciple. And anyone who has these three qualifications, humble inquiry, sincere questions, and a strong and sincere desire to put it into practice to the best of one's ability. To such a person, the key is given and the Vedas are revealed. Otherwise, you may become a Sanskrit scholar, but the Vedas will elude your brain, because the person who has manufactured this manual has manufactured, this is the way of understanding it. So Bhagavad Gita, you don't have to read all the scriptures, all the Vedic scriptures. This is the essence. If you know this, you know everything that ever needs to be known. The details you may understand later. Principle is there. And the postgraduate study of Bhagavad Gita is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which through various incidences in the history of the world establishes, just like you have a law book and a law journal. A law book quotes all the laws, IPC section 420, you know, this. Philosophy, just the hardcore laws. And in a law journal, you will read something, you know, Mr. Vasudevan versus Tamil Nadu government. Mr. Vasudevan, you know, extended his house beyond a particular thing. And then the government came and bulldozed everything and finished. When you read that article, what Mr. Vasudevan did, what the Tamil Nadu government took action, then you know, oh ho, if you do this, you get this. This is the principle. So the law books, the Bhagavad Gita is a law book. It's going to quote hardcore philosophical truths. But Srimad Bhagavatam, consisting of 18,000 verses, are from histories of the world, from various times in various places, where the law was followed, what was the benefit? Where the law was not followed, what was the punishment? So when we understand these, for a complete understanding of Bhagavad Gita, in all its details, we can study later Srimad Bhagavatam. These two books are enough to understand everything that you ever need to know about Vedas in terms of its application and practical use. So with this, we will conclude. I'm sorry, we are really exceeded. That's my weakness is, I feel that this body of knowledge is so intricate, so complicated. Unless we present examples, things will not become clear. So please forgive me for, you know, this tendency of mine to overspeak in my enthusiasm to share. I hope you will tolerate. We'll quickly have a slideshow. We will take question answers when you are taking dinner. I don't want to retain you any longer. I know it's a week-long thing, and you will have to take proper rest also to be active. Otherwise, you can't be sleeping in your offices. And we'll quickly have a slideshow. No. When they're going on the way. Okay. Okay. So some news for you. It's very hot here. So today the dinner prasad is arranged outside. It is very cool. You'll get some fresh air. And for ladies, a separate counter. And for gents, there is a separate counter so that you can quickly take prasad. And those who are in a hurry, they can leave early. And the notes will be provided as you're going out of what we have discussed today in a bullet form. Can you have the lights off? All the lights, even outside. Does really God exist? This is a $1 million question that people since time immemorial have asked, and many great thinkers, philosophers, and scientists have in their own way tried to understand and speculate and presented various theories. Next. So we were discussing about God, how it is the ultimate source of everything, the supreme creator, the supreme controller, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme enjoyer. For God to be God, that is it. And the proof is, behind every creation, there is a creator. A small thing like this requires a creator, a watchmaker. What to speak of this most complicated thing, the creation like a human being, a most perfect computer like a human being, which can reduplicate itself also, and the creation of God. Laws imply a lawmaker. We find in the universe there are so many laws. From the most macroscopic to the most microscopic level. At the macroscopic level in this universe, you find, you know, there are planets moving around a particular sun. There is a galaxy. You know, there's a solar system consisting, and a few of them become a galaxy, and then there is a Milky Way, and then there is a universe, and then there are some clusters, super clusters, and name it, you have it, so many expansions. But all of these are functioning under a particular law. Nothing is happening by chance. Next. Within our solar system, we find you can predict the rotation of all these planets around the sun, the rotation of the moons around the respective planets. There's a perfect order. You can predict what's going to happen because it's a law. Next. You don't find, you know, in the out universe, do not cross lane, go this way. All the planets are moving perfectly. They don't collide against each other. Unless there are some asteroids which hit. Next. From the most macroscopic like that, come to a human being. So many organs, perfect coordination. The hands don't overshoot. The legs walk somewhere and the hands go somewhere and mouth eats something else. Just imagine if all the body parts went on strike and did not cooperate. We'll go crazy. It's unimaginable, the human system, how complicated it is. And it's working in such coordination, especially, you know, playing some activities, games. You require such visuomotor coordination, such quick action, so much neural action, so much muscle action. What you are receiving, the input is being analyzed, and the output has to sell, you have to go. Suddenly you have to take a turn, the football goes like this and he has to take a turn. The table tennis ball is coming here. You have to see the ball, information should go inside your head. Then you should tell the hand, move this side. Can you imagine how much analysis must go on? And all this is happening day in and day out for every living entities since time immemorial. We take it so much for granted. Little paralysis or some problem in the head and you lose coordination. You can't even drink a glass of water properly. Whereas so many complicated things we are doing. We don't ever think about the miracle that God has created in the form of a human being. Such coordination, perfect laws working simultaneously, harmoniously. Forget about a human being. Forget about an organ. Take one cell. which is can't even be perceived by the human eye. One little cell, which is billionth of a millimeter, is more complicated than the city of Bombay in its intricacy in terms of system of functioning. It's like a perfectly planned city. There is a cell wall that doesn't allow any foreign element to come inside before checking it. And even if it comes, there is a lysosome. It's like a police department. Protection. It sends information. Go. There is a foreign body. Check whether he has passport, visa, everything. Otherwise, kick him out. And the lysosome realizes it can discriminate. Yeah. So this is the cell wall, which is like a great wall of China protecting. You know, that's a wonder of the world. One little wall against China, and they say it's a wonder of the world. But every little cell, billions of it in the human body, 60 billion out there or something, everything is a wonder in itself. Has a perfect wall. And this wall is so flexible, stretchable wall, and allows whatever is required and doesn't allow whatever is not required. And even by chance someone slips, there is the police department. This is the lysosome here. So the wall, you know, sentries here, some truths. So this is endoplasmic reticulum. Anyway, we'll discuss that. So lysosome is like the police department, protection department. Immediately send information, create some, you know, send some forces, some chemicals, which will completely destroy that foreign body by sending some kind of chemicals. Then there is the headquarters. Parliamentary house. In a state law, what is that? Assembly house. So this is the nucleus where the whole maintenance of this decision regarding what is happening, and then when it has to be destroyed, and if another model has to be created, the cell has to create, single cell like the amoeba, knows when it can create, when it has enough facility, it can procreate another cell. So for maintenance and expansion, the headquarters takes the decision. Can you imagine creating another city perfectly like the previous one, repeating that model? And even within that, there is another thing. This is the nucleolus, where all the files are stored. And you see these blue dots here on this, and the blue dots here. Here, all these small small, you can't see it here. They're called the ribosomes. They consist the RNA, which has the files for reduplication. You know, Xerox machine also is not able to produce exact Xerox. But these cells, day in and day out, even when you're sleeping without your knowledge, billions of cells are being produced. Billions of cells are being produced. Day in and day out. Till your death. During childhood, the growth is there because production is more and destruction is less because it's a new model. As you become 40 years old, middle age, production and destruction is equal rate. Therefore, you know, stability. And as you grow old, production becomes reduced, destruction is faster. Therefore, growth stops. And therefore, things start dwindling. There is no production according to consumption. So it's a body which is going on functioning throughout our life. And then there is chloroplast plants. There are special cells which I know receive the sun and transforms it into required energy. Then there is the mitochondria, which has its own energy producing system. Labor, it provides the labor, whatever is required to transform things. And this is the transportation, BEST. Whatever is, you know, from the office to be, the whole communication system is established by the endoplasmic reticulum. Amazing. Transportation system, protection, destruction, reduplication. Even in a single cell is going on much more intricate than most of the most major cities. As much as that. Next. Now if you take within that ribosome, which is a small speck in a cell, which is itself is too difficult to see. Within that is suppose a human being became millions of times small, millions of times small, and entered into that, he would see a perfect arrangement of chromosomes, nucleic acids, things perfectly in order, containing all information. In fact, the information that is contained in one cell, if put into books, will occupy much more, or one of these ribbons that you see, which is 26 in one particular thing, which is more in a cell, 36 of them, now 23 of them. They contain more information. If you put it in a book form, it will have 7 rooms of this size. Can you imagine? That is being, we are talking about, you know, Japan has become expert in reducing things in size. From room and to laptop and from there to palm top. But think about, where is the propensity coming from? From our original source. Who is the superman in terms of reducing things? He has reduced all that information in a small band. Hundreds of them in one cell which can't even be seen by the human eye. Therefore, the nose of the grandfather or the father is just like that. It's not that he has a different nose. He has nose at the back of his head. So much of info, just to create one in the computer, we know, to create one thing, another thing like that, so many instructions have to be given. Think about it. And we say that by chance things are happening, there's no one under control. Absolutely foolish. Next. Could life arise by chance? The things happen by chance. Next. We feel that it's like a gambling, you know, just throw the dice and things happen and by chance things are happening. Actually, when you say by chance, that means you don't know how things are working. Nothing happens by chance. Once I was taking one small boy from our orphanage, he went to the station and said, how come by chance all the trains are coming this side and all that side trains are coming there? And how every 2 minutes come, there's no accident. For him it was chance. By chance, every 2 minutes there's a train. And why the trains don't hit each other? For a childish person who doesn't understand things, who doesn't observe things, he feels that by chance things are happening. But if an intelligent man knows, nothing can happen by chance. There's a perfect organization law, which means a lawmaker. Next. Now, the person who claimed that man came from monkeys, Darwin, we feel that by chance things evolved. Suddenly the monkeys, from the branches, they jumped onto the benches. Nonsense. Doesn't make sense because there's no proof. Where is the link between them? Whose one leg is on the branch and one leg is on the bench? Where is that fellow? That's called the missing link. And later they realize all this thing that they had as a proof was all a hoax. The Piltdown man, so many things. It's amongst the scientific circles, it's a known thing that it's all bogus. But unfortunately, today, I was seeing our children's textbook, you know. They still say that we have come from monkeys and our ancestors were, you know, fighting with rocks and stones. In fact, the origin of this, he wrote a book, Darwin, in the late 19th century. He called it The Origins of Species. He himself says, can you go to the next one? This is a statement from his book. To suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distance, for admitting different amount of light, could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest. This is a statement by Darwin, who propounded this theory. He says, I freely confess that a complicated thing like the retina of the eye, one single eye, billions and millions of rods and cones to adjust to, you know, light and darkness so quickly, more complicated than the most complicated camera. Imagine a table tennis champion, how much the lens has to adjust to the ball going there and ball coming here. If that same ball has to be photographed by a camera. Can you imagine how much he has to adjust the lens? How quickly? But the human eye can do that. He says, I freely confess that it is absurd to the highest degree. But we accept this absurd theory and hold it and claim ourselves very scientific. How foolish. Next. Next. It's just like saying random machine which breaks everything, all throw all the screws inside, and from inside comes out a sentient robot and says, I was created by chance. Take a grinder where all, you know, put all nuts and bolts, and out comes a sentient robot telling, thank you very much for creating me. You are my God. It's as absurd as this. Next. And to say that monkeys evolved into human being is just like saying, take a radio and take one condenser and resistor, capacitor, and put the other one, and suddenly the radio will become a television. We understand how complicated it is to transform one to the other. It's totally different. Absolutely, there is no evidence, scientific evidence, to prove that actually it has happened. It's simply a speculation of Darwin. And he agrees that I have simply speculated. This is my only theory. So many places, I have not quoted it here, he himself confesses that it is absurd to the highest degree. But unfortunately, with ill motivations, people want to do this. Because if they accept this theory, there is no accountability to their actions. They are not accountable to God. If you say there is no God, then you can do any damn thing you want. You can create your own laws. Next. The hen is a better scientist, because the hen gives an egg, sits on it, and hatches it. If a scientist can manufacture an egg in his laboratory, not borrow it from the hen, and sit on it for 21 days and hatch it, and a hen comes out, then we will throw the Bhagavad Gita into the dustbin. Till then, I think all the other formulas can be kept aside and we accept the Gita. We see behind any creation, there is a hand of a creator. So this is like a laboratory, this world. Perfectly organized things are being manufactured day in and day out. What is the hand? Whose hand is behind all this? This is to be understood. Next. Therefore, it is enjoined in the scriptures, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. One should inquire. And what is the inquiry? Janmadyasya Yataha. And that is, from what source is everything coming? And that we have discussed to be none other than God. Tomorrow we will be discussing if really God exists, which seems very probable, who is He? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.